This afternoon, we are so privileged to have on the Joyride writer extraordinaire Jen Thorpe. She's written so many different types of things. That's why I think it's going to be such an interesting conversation this afternoon. She's written essays, she's written novels, she's written children's books, and she's been nominated for so many awards. And now she's decided to write this book called Adulting 101, How to Survive the Real World. Jen Thorpe, welcome to the show, and thank you for taking the time to chat to us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's very exciting to be here.
So, Adulting 101, you said 20 years after you left school, you decided to start writing this book. What inspired you to delve into this topic? Because I've checked some of your other work, and I mean, you're a very strong feminist background, and I mean, this is something totally going left of the main road, you know, of what you're normally used to writing. Tell us what inspired you to go in this direction.
Well, to be honest, it was in the middle of COVID, and I was hanging up the laundry outside and thinking just how tough it felt to navigate the world in these past 2 years, and how sometimes you just really want someone to say something supportive or to give you the information you need. And I still am an ardent feminist, 100% committed, but I felt like the world needed something gentle and accessible and just needed a little bit of a supportive book that could help them get through the day.
You also wrote a sentence there that you learned to forgive the younger you. Tell me a little bit more about that.
I think when we start out as an adult, everything is really tricky to navigate, and we don't always have the advice and information we need to make the right decisions. Not that I'm necessarily making all the right decisions now, but I think when you get a bit older, you realize that sometimes you have to make the mistakes in order to make the right choices in the end of the day. So I thought, I was thinking, you know, if I'd had a book like this, I wouldn't have made maybe some bad decisions on places to rent, for example, or I would have made better decisions about sleep when I was at university. But at the time, I did the best with the information I had. So it was, necessary to give myself a bit of a break.
And that's the one thing I love about the book. It's so easy to read, and it's easy to follow, and it all actually makes sense. You know, it's all these things that you actually already know, but you just need someone to slap you over the head and say, hey, pay attention. You know, this is what you should really be focusing on. And 8 chapters, very easy to go through. I think over the next 4 weeks, it's going to be so interesting to delve into them. And I think today we're going to kick off with chapter 1, which talks about sleep. And I think people underestimate sleep. And I love one of the quotes that you took from Shakespeare, where he says, sleep that soothes away all our worries, sleep that puts each day to rest, sleep that relieves the weary laborer and heals hurt minds. Sleep, the main course in life's feast and the most nourishing. If I could tell my younger self something, it would be, Guy, sleep as much as you can.
Well, I think we were saying before, I'm a brand new parent, and I'm very aware of sleep and the impact it has on your energy, your mental health, your physical health at the moment. I think we all could have got more sleep as youngsters.
Definitely. And you start out the book by talking about sleep and how much sleep is good sleep. I mean, how do you know as a person if you've slept enough?
Well, so a lot of the times we're not actually good judges of how much we've slept in the night before. You know, sometimes you wake up and you feel exhausted after lying in bed for 10 hours, and sometimes you put your head down for 6 and feel great. But there is a minimum amount of sleep that we need in the day. So most of us need between 6 and 8 hours of sleep as adults. So if you're getting around on less than that, you're actually not functioning at your optimum. Your brain isn't working properly, your body isn't working properly, and you're going to make really poor decisions about driving, about the food that you want, and about, you know, just generally poor decisions because your emotions are not really regulated. So between 6 and 8 hours is ideal. I mean, some people need a little bit more, definitely one of them at the moment. Some people need a bit less, but most of us need 6 to 8.
Why is it so important? I mean, why is sleep so important for us?
Well, you know, there's simple things like safety, for example. We all need sleep to make good decisions on the road when we're driving. But we actually need sleep in an emotional way as well. So when we're dreaming, we process things that happen to us during the day. We're able to work through traumas and difficult circumstances, which many of us in South Africa have. When we get good deep sleep, our bodies are able to recover physically, to repair injuries that we have. Our bodies are literally taking care of us. So it's like overnight therapy, both in the physical and emotional sense.
So all those injuries we got when we were younger never got healed because we never got sleep. Now we're waiting for it to happen when we're in our older age.
Yeah. It seems might like be a bit late now.
Tell me, morning larks versus night owls. You know, some people always, it irritates me sometimes, people that say, oh, you got to be up before 4 a.m. in the morning, and that's when you're at your most productive. Different sleep patterns work for different people, right?
Absolutely. The world, though, is structured to benefit those morning larks, those people who feel great when they get up early. I'm also not a morning lark, so I'm very sympathetic to you. And a lot of the advice does say, get up early, be productive, you know, the 5 a.m. club, etc. But it's actually biological whether we are our best selves early in the morning or late at night. It's not something that we can train ourselves out of. And these morning lark and night owl patterns sort of shift during our lifetime. As children or as babies, obviously have no pattern at all. As children, we're often morning people. And then as teenagers, they're often, night owls, which is really hectic for school and stuff because it isn't actually the best time to be educated when you're feeling exhausted and sluggish. And so there's definitely something to think about in terms of the way we structure our school day, the way we structure our studying, our work, if we're able to have that flexibility to work with our chronotype, which is whether you're a morning lark or a night owl.
Makes sense. Things that affect our sleep that we might not be aware of.
So many things affect our sleep. One of the big ones that I think all of us could do better with is our phones and our devices. That blue light on your screen just zaps your body's ability to go to sleep properly and to tell itself through chemicals in our brain that we need the sleep we have. So we lie down and we think, oh, I'll just look at my phone for 5 minutes, and then it's like an hour later and your body hasn't made any hormones to tell you to go to sleep. So we, like children, we avoid the sleep we need. And then there's also caffeine. All of us drink coffee or tea. And caffeine is interesting because if you have a coffee early in the morning, quite a lot of that caffeine is still in your body much later in the day. So you might think, oh, I can drink a second cup of coffee in the afternoon. But what you don't realize is that there's receptors in your brain that are being blocked from sending the messages they need to send that say, hey, you're actually tired. And so then what we have is that caffeine crash that many of us will recognize from that 3 p.m. time at work. And so, if you're going to drink caffeine, definitely drink it in the morning. And then one of the things South Africans do a lot is drink too much. And a lot of us will say, oh, but I sleep great after a night out. You know, I feel like a solid, I'm passed out, dead to the world. But what you actually are is sedated. You're not able to enter your normal sleep cycles. And so that's why it feels like you've always had these vivid dreams at the end of a night after one too many drinks, because your body is trying to catch up on those necessary dreams.
Nightmares as well.
And then the final one I think is important is stress, which is a toughie, because when you're stressed, you often don't sleep, and then you feel more stressed, and so you don't sleep. It's a terrible cycle, but if you can do some gentle breathing exercises or meditation before bed, it can really help you to sleep better.
How dangerous is sleep deprivation?
It's really, really dangerous. I mean, I was talking with friends the other day about the medical residency at hospitals and how it was invented, and doctors are working really long shifts late into the night with very little sleep, and that affects your motor skills, it affects your physical and mental ability, so you make less good decisions, your decisions are a lot slower. So if you think about, people who are long-distance bus drivers or long-distance truck drivers, or who are just having to get up so early to get to work every day because of our chronic traffic and really poor public transport, then we are making really bad decisions. And what happens sometimes on the road is you have a micro sleep. So you actually fall asleep without realizing that you've fallen asleep.
That has happened to me. That's happened to me, and it's scary.
It's happened to so many of us, especially on a long drive when you're hot and you're not getting enough air. And you don't realize it. So you often think, oh, I don't actually remember taking this off ramp, or, oh, that traffic light, did I stop properly? And that's because you've fallen asleep without realizing. So it's really dangerous. And stats from around the world are in the book, but there a lot of car accidents are attributable to sleep deprivation. I also mentioned Arianna Huffington, who people might know from the Huffington Post. She actually collapsed from sleep deprivation. She was doing 4 hours a night, and she collapsed at work because her body actually couldn't continue to function. Wow. So it's really, really risky.
Tell me, people that claim they are hyperactive, that fall into this trap especially, how do you know when you are tired? Like, are there signs that you can look out for, especially for people that fight this whole sleep concept? Mm-hmm. Are there things that you can look out for when you know, okay, your body's telling you you need to go rest?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because you'd think we would know this, right?
Yeah.
But when you're so tired all the time, things like yawning or, you know, a feeling of heavy eyelids or drowsiness are just part of your normal life. But these really are signs that we are in need of sleep. There's also things like daydreaming, being unable to concentrate on what people are saying. So when someone asks you a question, for example, and you forget what they've asked you and what you're saying, that's a very common sign that you're probably asleep. And then physical stuff like muscle aches and pains, headaches, and emotional feelings of moodiness, irritability. One of the common ones that is very interesting is food cravings, because your body doesn't tell itself that when you're really chronically overtired, your body actually isn't able to know when it's thirsty or hungry properly. So if you're making your morning meal decision when you had a poor night's sleep, you're probably going to make a poor choice in terms of what you're eating, and that obviously contributes to your overall ill health.
So when we move along from sleep, then we get to the next thing that you talk about in your book is the chapter called Take a Deep Breath. And a lot of people are scared of meditation because they think it's a Eastern philosophical thing. Mm. But it's actually a very natural thing just to become quiet and just center yourself a little bit. Take us a little bit through the journey of meditation and how you see it affecting our lives as adults.
Well, for me, I think if all of us know when you're feeling stressed and you let out a big sigh, you feel immediately better. And that's because you're exhaling a lot of built-up tension in your body, and you take a very big, deep breath after that, bringing lots of, you know, good air into your system. So meditation is really just taking the time to do the deep breathing every day. And there's loads of different, like you say, philosophies around it. And, of course, you can subscribe to those if you want to, and you can choose not to. But it really means stopping the habit of getting wrapped up in the ideas, our ideas and feelings, and just letting stress pass us by, letting worries pass us by. And it helps us to sleep. It helps us to breathe better. It helps us to, you know, to make better decisions. So all of the things in adulting are really about, you know, being your best self so you can make good decisions. And meditating is tough when you start out because you have to sit still, which is hard for a lot of people.
And get the voices in your head to stay quiet as well.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So I think a lot of people think, okay, I'm going to meditate. I'm going to empty my mind of thoughts. And that's not really how it works. What you're doing is saying, okay, I'm thinking a thought. I see you thought, I'm letting you go. And then you let your mind calm down again. And as the next thought arises, so the same thing. So a good analogy that I mentioned in the book is, you know, you're sitting on the side of the road watching cars. You're not trying to focus on one specific car. You're just noticing that cars are passing and you're just letting them pass you by. So meditation aims to do the same thing with our thoughts, which is very helpful when you're feeling anxious and your thoughts are rushing and feeling very important, to just say, whoa, I'm going to focus on my breath. I'm going to take a step back for a second. Even 5 to 10 minutes a day make a huge difference to your heart rate, to your body's recovery, to your feelings of anxiety. That's a really powerful tool.
And one thing that I picked up is you speak about breathing as well. How important is breathing properly? Because I think a lot of us don't breathe properly. I think we breathe shallow, and then we don't get enough oxygen into our system.
Absolutely, and lots of us breathe through our mouths, especially when we are stressed. So you start to panic, and so you'll start to take shallow breaths only into the top of your chest. And our mouths are not actually designed for breathing. They're designed for eating and drinking and talking. Our noses are really well designed for taking in breath, for making our lungs moist, for getting the maximum amount of oxygen into our system. So breathing through your nose is really important. So if you take a deep breath in through your nose and you hold your breath for a second and you breathe out very slowly through your nose or through your mouth, you will instantly feel calmer. And that's because that's how our body's programmed. It's supposed to breathe like that. But it might take some retraining, especially if you're a smoker or if you are someone who's had, for example, braces, or you have a mouth structural problem, then it can really be hard to learn how to breathe. Again, but if you just concentrate on your breath for 10 minutes a day, that makes a huge amount of difference.
So in a nutshell, when you look at these first two chapters, sleep and breathing, in a nutshell, what are the most important takeaways from your experience?
I think if we commit to having a good sleep routine at night, to making our room a calm place that doesn't have our phone in it, you know, get an alarm clock, they still sell them, you can make a huge difference to your day. Aim for between 6 and 8 hours. Don't stay up late on the weekend and then sleep in late and mess with your sleep cycle. Try to be regular and commit to getting that sleep. It will make a huge difference to your feelings, to your health. I mean, the same with meditation. If you can put that into your sleep routine, for example, if you can spend that 10 minutes quietening your mind before bed, you'll have a more restful night, you're less likely to be anxious and wake up in the night, and you're likely to navigate the day in a more calm way. It's basically taking care of yourself. It's things that we, you know, you teach your children this when they're little. It's good to take care of yourselves as well. So I'm basically giving you permission to care for yourself in a nice, kind way.
Thank you so much, Jen Thorpe. And you take care of yourself and the new addition to your family. I hope you get some sleep in. And I'm looking forward. Next week, we'll be talking about mental well-being and moving a little bit, you know, getting that bum off the chair and getting some exercise done.
The Joyride with Nico, Nikki, Aaron, and JB. Proudly made possible by Arinel Pharmacy Group. Family values. Values for the whole family.